Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Vampire's Mark II, Hellstorm, by Rachel Jonas. Narrated by Sarah Puckett and Alex Kidd. Chapter 1. Brimstone. The wage of sin, death, carnage, and pain, 'tis upon us now, will its sting never wane? In times of old, our hope once held, with wrath so bold, rebellion's voice now quelled. Pride and courage stripped away by war, a horizon of darkness upon us evermore. A passage from Red Prose, a collection of cautionary children's folk songs. Origin, postbellum North America. Year of publication, unknown. Author, unknown. Status, banned from publication and distribution. Karina. A small crystal globe danced in my vision. It once rested on a bookcase, but now hung suspended in midair, bathed in the glow of warm firelight as it swirled in smooth circles. I hadn't been inside this space yet, Julian's study. So far, I'd only laid eyes on areas along the way, from the grandiose foyer to the blue suite, which had been labeled mine. I had to wonder if being invited into one of the more intimate spaces of his home, among his dynasty brothers, was Julian's attempt at gradually assimilating me into this life. I imagined myself as a vibrant red thread, forcibly woven into his dark tapestry, out of place, disrupting the balance. A glint of light caused me to peer up when the globe I'd been fixated on changed course, drifting across the room now. It came to rest gently in the hand of the one who controlled it, Levi. I felt his curious stare long before our gazes locked, felt it even as my vision of him shifted to his slightly parted lips. The undertones of a wicked smirk I now knew to be his default expression were evident. He sat calmly amidst our collective turmoil and drama, slouched in an armchair as if life as we knew it hadn't just been turned upside down suddenly. No, Levi was not rattled. In fact, as his gaze climbed the length of my legs, past my torso to gawk at my chest, I was pretty certain worry was not his prevailing thought. In the 12 hours since the press conference debacle ended, he and I hadn't exchanged many words, not even when the magistrate arrived with paperwork, making the other's ownership of me official, like it already was for Julian. But those heated glances between Levi and I, those loaded stares, they made my pulse quicken. I realized something very quickly. One could never quite prepare for the force of nature that was Levi Buchanan. The flagrant masculinity that seeped from his pores, the thick, unapologetic sensuality that took rest in whatever space he occupied. Even now, all he'd done was sit and stare as the globe churned in his palm, but it was enough. Enough to leave me in need of a cigarette, and I didn't even smoke. Focus, Corey. Focus. My eyes peered down at the binder, slamming it shut when I remembered why we were all here, the princes and myself. All four had sat quietly while I read Silas's propaganda. There was no other word for it. A sales pitch meant to explain the inner workings of a blood bond. He once intended to present it as a choice, but now it had all but been forced on me, on them. If I refused, I'd likely be killed right alongside Julian when the truth came to light. In short, his life and mine depended on it.
"Do you have questions?"
Silas asked reluctantly.
"We are here to answer them as best as we can."
I met his gaze, instantly feeling unsettled. I still hadn't gotten used to that penetrating stare of his. The few times his attention had been focused on me, it was almost as if he saw straight through to the secrets I was desperate to hold. Turning away, I freed myself of his spell, ignoring the boyish charm that bled through, despite him and the others being the epitome of the word man. Don't let them get to you. I know you shared this with me because you want me to understand the bond, but if I'm honest, I'm even more confused now than before, I admitted. Roman shifted in his seat, running a hand through his dark curls when my gaze met his. Honesty, he scoffed. Isn't that a new concept for you, Karina? I glared, but didn't speak. Nothing good would come of explaining that I only lied to protect the ones I loved. He'd have to know something about love to understand love, and I guessed he didn't.
It's abundantly clear everyone in this room but me has gone insane,
Roman fumed.
I mean, we are more concerned with spoon-feeding this girl details about our world, a world she'll never understand, when what we should be focused on is figuring out who tipped off John Carlyle. For all we know, we should be out there hunting down the two sentinels from the gala. If they've been talking...
Julian cut in as the voice of reason, passing a stern look toward Roman.
The damage is already done. The last thing we need is to be seen ripping and running like madmen, trying to silence those guards and whoever else might speak ill of us. We already look guilty enough in the eye of the people. Let's not give them any more ammunition.
And besides, if we should have thought to silence anyone, it's Madame Amelia, Levi grumbled, breathing deeply afterward. We've spun so many lies we were sloppy, forgetting to tie up one of our most important loose ends. I couldn't know for sure he didn't mean Madame Amelia should have been silenced permanently, or if that was simply my interpretation. Silex exhaled sharply, doing little to conceal his frustration with Roman's outburst and how it sidetracked our conversation. Roman, on the other hand, seemed to care very little whether his statement offended me, or anyone else for that matter. Just being in the room with the guy terrified me, although I'd never let that show. He wasn't like the others. While no, I didn't trust any of them all that much, it was a different kind of darkness that swelled within Roman. The fear I felt when near him, alone, had amplified my resolve to find a way out of here. I'd cooperate as long as necessary for the sake of survival. However, the first chance I got, I'd bail. Silas dropped down onto the couch. I'd been seated stiffly on the opposite end, unable to relax.
We'll sort it all out, he expressed patiently.
As infuriating as all this had been, I couldn't find it in me to treat him coldly. Maybe it was because he'd only spoken to me with kindness today and comforted me as things spiraled on that stage. From what I did take from the writing, amidst foreign terms and big words I didn't recognize, it seemed the bond would run deep, very deep. So we'll all be affected? I asked. Not just me?
Correct. Silas offered me a smile before continuing. It will be like each of us absorbing a bit of your essence, a bit of who you are at the most basic level, he explained. And likewise, you'll take on a small part of each of us as well.
That key detail made my heart leap, and I immediately opened the binder again in search of that particular passage. I didn't read that, I admitted, and I don't feel much of a change since Julian bit me.
Since Julian saved me.
Silas nodded, making it clear this was normal.
That won't happen until the claiming.
Another term I didn't understand, but perhaps I would have if I'd managed to get through the entire encyclopedia he'd put together overnight.
What's a claiming is more than just being bitten,
he interjected after sensing what I'd say.
What will solidify the bond is when the two of you engage in a mutual feeding.
There was no missing how gingerly he'd just stated that. I guessed he knew I'd freak out hearing it. My posture straightened, and I locked eyes with Silas again. Mutual feeding, as in, not only do I have to let him take blood from me, but I'm expected to take his? I asked, seeking clarity. There was a shrill tone to my voice that reminded me of my mother's whenever she got worked up. And worked up I was, big time.
Relax, Silas insisted, standing from the couch when I did. It's not as bad as I'm sure you're imagining it to be.
I just began to pace when his words stopped me dead in my tracks. Easy for you to say. He lifted both hands shoulder high as if he meant to surrender.
Believe me, I'm not making light of the situation, he insisted. I know this has been a lot to absorb in such a short amount of time, but I assure you if there was another way to go about this, we would have gladly taken it.
Unmoving, I only stared as he spoke.
You have to believe we took your feelings into consideration, Karina, as much as we did Julian's. But unfortunately, this was the only solution that didn't end with one of you being taken to the butcher as a new shiny toy to break.
My skin crawled at the mention of that man, the savage who prided himself in breaking the will of the most steadfast humans on Earth. I knew this to be true, because many of his victims had been intricate components of our network. Understood, was the only response I could muster up for Silas. This was all so messed up. How we'd been forced to surrender to one another, because the world their kind created was so cruel, so unforgiving that even a prince couldn't be pardoned. But this was our reality now. Theirs. Mine. Quickly, I came to the conclusion that it wouldn't do any of us any good to stall. So, what needs to happen now? I blurted. What's our next move? Silas, being incredibly perceptive, seemed to notice the sudden change in my mood. I'd gone from practically wearing my emotions on my sleeve to hiding any trace of them behind a thick wall, a defense mechanism I developed at an early age.
Well, he sighed. Julian's already administered the bite, so the next thing to take place should be the claiming. He needs to feed from you while his venom is still commingling with your blood. And seeing as how that should wear off by morning, that means it needs to happen tonight.
The rims of my nostrils flared when I breathed deeply. Tonight. It wasn't likely my face gave anything away, despite feeling so much. Well, there's no sense in waiting, I suppose. Let's get this show on the road. It was a bold move, but I started toward the door without being prompted.
Karina.
Hearing my name leave Silas's lips so sweetly, I halted, peering over my shoulder simply because I hadn't expected to hear it spoken in such a way.
There's still time, if you'd like to finish discussing this first.
He offered. Time. My thoughts snagged on that one word. It was a phrase that had so many strange meanings to me now. There was only so much time before my life, as I knew it, would be over. Then there was an eternal life ahead of me, in which time would lose its significance. Peering up at Silas, I fought the stinging in my eyes, certain it meant tears were on the way. It's fine, I replied. I'm ready. Chapter 2. Karina. The option to choose where the claiming took place was left up to me. Of all the rooms in this sprawling estate, my bedroom was the only one that felt familiar, even if only a little. My hands trembled in my lap as Julian and I sat side by side, resting on the edge of my bed. We were both still clothed in our attire from the press conference. Me, the sleeveless blouse and gray pants that had been chosen for me. Julian, now missing the suit jacket, but still wearing the pants and dress shirt rolled up to both elbows. Navy blue tie undone around his neck. With all that transpired, no one thought to change afterward. I twirled the silver bracelet from Felix around my wrist as we sat in silence. The only light in the room came from the fire Elle had lit for us. It cast ominous shadows on the walls, but they gave me something to focus on other than Julian, other than the obligation hanging heavy in the room.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean for any of this to happen.
I suspected the hint of confidence he radiated to be false. That suspicion grew when he lowered his head. There were so many things I could have been angry about, but I found it harder and harder to recall that emotion since being bitten. That softness I felt toward Julian only took a stronger hold on me as the hours passed. It hadn't even been a full 2 days, and here I was, feeling something for the Prince of the Eastern Quadrant I didn't think possible. Sympathy. "Don't blame yourself," I mumbled. This had all just been one horror after another, and he was not at fault. I saw that now. So, bearing in mind that he'd saved me so many times since our first meeting, I made the first move. "Here." His stare fell on my wrist when I extended it toward him as an offering. It wasn't until his gaze rose to meet mine that I understood the full breadth of the sorrow he felt. I hadn't said as much, but he seemed to sense how much I valued my humanity, how giving that up pained me, even if the alternative had been death. The tears I fought to hold in finally slipped down my cheeks, and I didn't bother pushing them aside. Doing so would have only cleared the way for more. "It's okay," I whispered. "We don't have a choice." The words were barely heard as I surrendered to him. Literally, figuratively. Cool fingertips chilled my skin when my wrist was brought to his mouth. Our eyes locked just as the soft fleshiness of his lips pressed down over it. The next instant, a contrasting sensation startled me. 2 sharp jabs. His teeth were like pinpricks as they punctured through my flesh. A sane person would have been fighting for her life. I should have been absolutely terrified, but I was hypnotized by the first deep draw he took of my blood. Within seconds, long, dirty blonde lashes closed over his eyes, and the light grip he had on my arm tightened. He seemed to slip into what could only be described as a blissful trance. What if he can't stop? What if he loses himself and rips me to shreds instead? I considered these things, but said nothing. There was no taking my eyes off him. This beautiful monster I'd slowly begun to realize wasn't so easy to figure out after all. For a while, I thought I had him pegged, only to find out that assumption was wrong. His throat moved with one last swallow, and slowly, as if the act of stopping was physically painful, he pulled away. I didn't miss how he allowed his lips to drag over my skin, collecting a rogue trickle of blood as it ran down my arm. Our gazes locked, and only then did I notice the darkness that had filled his eyes. It faded with each passing second, eventually leaving behind the otherworldly white with their silver centers. The realization that my chest heaved alerted me of my rapid breathing. I was practically panting, breathless as I witnessed the single most impressive act of restraint I'd ever seen. There was a fleeting moment where I thought he might lean in for more, but he didn't, lowering my arm instead. Perhaps to curb the temptation, I knew I hadn't misjudged. He removed a handkerchief from his back pocket, gesturing for me to wipe away the remnants. Turning to watch him, I wondered if he felt the effects Silas had spoken of earlier. Had the most basic parts of my psyche already begun to seep into his? Nothing I saw indicated such, but I wondered. A sudden movement brought my eye to him again. Without hesitating, he bit into his own wrist, using just enough force to break the skin. When he held it out to me, like I'd done for him, I only stared. My stomach churned like mad, causing a wave of nausea to hit me out of nowhere. I wasn't like them. This wasn't normal to me. When I peered up, Julian let out a short, chuffed laugh, and the sound of it warmed me to my core. The mood, suddenly lighter, eased some of the tension I carried in my shoulders. "Not to make light of it or anything," he started.
that I don't think you have to take much of it.
I supposed he meant to console me, but it didn't work. I didn't want to take any of it.
Woman up, Corey. It's just a little blood. It'll be quick and painless. Just do it.
The pep talk seemed to work, but I had to act before losing the nerve. Snatching Julian's arm where it hovered in the air, my mouth clasped over the small puncture wounds and tasted the first hint of blood. Bitter, metallic.
Don't puke, kid. Keep it down, or you might have to start over.
I swallowed again, this time drawing out more from his arm. One last gulp and I pulled away, using the handkerchief I'd been given, this time pressing it to my lips. When my eyes slammed shut, another of Julian's deep, sultry laughs filled the silence.
Wasn't so bad, was it?
A dark gaze was my answer, and I was certain he could read it. The sight of it only made him laugh harder. Despite myself, I smiled too. Happy my misery can amuse you. The deed was done.
So what now? I asked. Do we just wait, or...
Julian shrugged, and it was then that I remembered he and the others were almost as clueless about this as I was. Even what Silas knew had only come from one night of feverish research. There certainly were no hard, fast rules on which any of us could rely.
I guess we just wait, was Julian's only offering.
Blowing all the air from my lungs, I stared at the wall, at the odd shadows the fire cast on it as an idea struck me. Might go faster if we talk. The suggestion garnered me his full attention, and I, admittedly, shied away from it a bit, avoiding eye contact.
Sure. Feel free to start,
he replied, a smile ghosting on his lips. I scrambled for a conversation starter, but decided to kill two birds with one stone. Pass time, dig for information. What do you four get out of this blood bond? I mean, something made the crowd suddenly cast down their pitchforks when Levi made the announcement. Julian's palms sank into the mattress as he leaned back to get comfortable.
Well, it's less about what we get out of it, and more about what the Ionite community as a whole gets out of it.
His reply only confused me more. I don't understand. Julian gathered his thoughts, probably thinking of how he could break things down in a way I, a lowly human, would understand.
I'm assuming you already know Ionites from each quadrant have their own respective abilities.
I nodded as he continued.
Well, there's more to it than that. The region-specific gifts are the result of there being four strains of the vaccine our people were given. Each emperor also received one of the four, only a far more elegant version. I suppose it was Ian's way of creating a hierarchy among a population that could technically live forever.
Without him elaborating, I believe I understood. These gifts Julian spoke of, the monarchs possessed them tenfold. There were the physical differences between the royals, how the princes and their fathers towered the average Ionite male, their silver gazes and unmatched physical perfection. Julian's strength was likely only rivaled by his father's. I guessed Silas's mental capabilities were more fine-tuned and powerful than others in his quadrant. The same for Levi's telekinetic strengths and Roman's physical gifts.
Another thing Percival did to set the men of the royal families apart was make us immune to the venom of an everyday Ionite. Ours will always kill one of them instantly. However, only venom from an emperor would prove fatal to another emperor.
Or from a prince to an emperor, from a son to a father. It instantly reminded me of how Julian had stood to guard me. He had intervened to spare his father certain death when the rogue reporter dared him to feed on me. I also remembered how the other princes fell in line to shield me, much like Julian had. They surrounded me like a fortress, and despite the ravenous beasts that filled the room, I couldn't remember a time I felt more protected. You said men of the royal families, I pointed out when my thoughts shifted. Did he intentionally exclude women? Does the same not apply to them? When Julian searched my expression, I got the feeling he thought he'd find offense there. Only I'd never limited myself to only being an advocate for women. There was no room for feminism in a world where an entire people, male and female, remained severely oppressed. He studied me a moment longer, likely only finding curiosity within my gaze.
Yes, it's the reason Roman, Silas, Levi, and I have our father's silver eyes instead of red like our mother's, he explained. The women are gifted, yes, but the amplified traits of our given strains lie dormant in them. Hence the craze that ensued roughly 20 years ago for our fathers to produce male heirs. I suppose they wanted to ensure that each quadrant had the strongest possible ionites in power.
This was information I hadn't considered before, hadn't given the details much thought because the history of the four strains was unclear. Creating this hierarchy, this sense of the few being greater than the masses, had been Dr. Percival's way of enforcing social order. Below the general ionite population was the common roamer, ranking dead last, humans. My eyes slammed shut with that acknowledgement, breathing deeply. I was aware that he had yet to fully answer my question, but it was time to divert the conversation. I couldn't afford to let the darkness in, not if I intended to keep my head clear. Have you spoken with your father anymore today, since the incident? I blurted, wanting to redirect my thoughts. There was a small chance this question was one I shouldn't have asked, one more appropriate when discussed between two people on a level of emotional intimacy Julian and I hadn't reached. Still, I barely hesitated. Julian's gaze lowered to the floor as he answered,
"Actually, no, I haven't."
There was a distant look in his eyes I didn't miss. I also caught the gravity in his tone. In another world, one where it made sense to sympathize with him, I might have reached for his hand. "You stood up for me," I commented. "I'm not sure I thanked you for that." A dim smile returned to his face.
"You don't have to thank me. It was the right thing to do."
My gaze lifted when his response surprised me, mostly because I hadn't really thought of it as a moral dilemma on his part, a matter of doing right by me. He must have taken note of the bewilderment on my face when I swallowed hard. I guessed as much because of how quickly he looked away.
"So, do you feel anything yet?"
he stammered a bit when asking. Focusing inward, I evaluated my thoughts, my senses. I then shook my head. "Nothing. You?"
"I do,"
he said, pausing to breathe deep while I waited on the edge of my seat.
"It's like I have this extreme sense of justice, a more prominent awareness of right and wrong that simply wasn't there before."
Intrigue filled his expression as his gaze shifted toward me.
"The sensation is so strong, it
feels like it'll eat you alive if you don't quench it," I added. He continued to stare when he gave a wordless nod. "Yeah," I chuckled. "I might know a thing or two about that." It shouldn't have surprised me that this was the trait he absorbed from me. I suppose, if I was being honest, I knew it to be my most defining characteristic. Poor guy had no idea what he was in for now. My sense of responsibility, my thirst for justice, kept me up most nights. It felt like there was always more to be done. Most of my meals were had while plotting strategy. If I wasn't studying a map, I was going over a list of harvest identification numbers with banks that could potentially be candidates for freedom. If it wasn't a list of hens, it was an inventory list that needed to be evaluated before our next run. I was loyal to my cause, and depending on who you asked, maybe to a fault. My lips parted to speak, but then pressed closed again. I felt odd. When the room seemed to spin, I was grateful to already be seated on the bed. There was a strange ringing in my ears, and all other sound seemed to fade into the background. However, just as soon as it came, it was gone. Julian observed me.
"I take it you've just felt the effects?"
Feeling overwhelmed as my senses settled, I gave a nod. It's either that or one heck of a seizure getting ready to strike. Only I knew it wasn't that. This was something else. Well, don't keep me in suspense, Jillian chuckled.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?